I was kind of brought up, or I remember learning, just let it all, emotionally, just let it all hang out, and, which is sort of the opposite from stuffing it in. It took me a long time to realize it's something that I call diminishing return. So I've always been against the button that has an X through guilt. I don't really believe in guilt. To me, cringing and what was the other
wincing.
One? Cringing and wincing and being aware is sort of the just before the point of diminishing return. When it becomes flogging yourself with guilt, that's you've reached the point of diminishing return. But there, then there's the way to the other side is total moral relativism. Anything that anyone does is fine. That's my I like my
that's
point
right.
of diminishing. I do that for what I call the mental paper picker upper too. I've got a zillion things going. Sometimes it's good to analyze the situation, but you know, if you're a person who up stuffing everything, well then you want to learn a little the other way. If you aren't always be spewing, it might be good to come.
What you're describing is balancing, really. And one of the things about, I remember when I realized this, I don't know when it was, some time ago, I realized that what we're doing, I mean, always, anyway, if we're becoming more conscious beings, but certainly through this meditation, as we become really aware of the practice of meditation about what all of that that's going on inside, it's a balancing act. It's like a dynamic, constant balancing act. And that what you've described gets to be so fine and so subtle. It's like, you know, wanting to be with something and wanting to get up and pee. I'm going to sit for a few more breaths, but I need to get up and pee. And I don't need to distract myself just yet. I can hang on for a while, but we don't get to the point where we're struggling. It's like when, and there's no right or wrong. It's not a fixed thing. It's an adjusting. And at times in meditation, we want to be closer to something and get to under something more. And at other times, we want to be way more distant and have a much bigger overview. And so it's an adjusting. Sometimes we need to bring in, you know, really simplicity. Sometimes we need to bring in a lot of reassurance. Like I talked about how to help the little kids soothe down. Sometimes you have to really, really be soothing, encouraging, reassuring, forgiving. Sometimes you get, it's very impersonal. And it's always a movement. It's always an adjusting going on. So it's a balancing act. Becoming conscious is an ongoing dynamic balancing. As you described, a little of this, and maybe a little more of this, and that's enough of this, backing off here a little bit, going over this way, not too far. It's when we get to the any that's an extreme, we're falling off balance, and then we've lost it, whatever it is. We got too this, or too judgmental, or too afraid, or we've got caught up again. But we can entertain the possibilities and work with these forces, but it takes awareness and consciousness and awakeness to be able to keep all the time. And it gets also the thing to say about meditating as we do more, this is my experience of it's years now, I trust the process, it does it by itself because I understand. Like I understand if I go further with this, it will not work. And so it already stops itself before I have to go, should I go further and get into trouble? And it does not so much work now, it's much more sort of spontaneous. Hi, in the back. Your name.
Chris.
Hi, Chris.
So if you're experiencing something without annotating it or without adding a story to it, but the base experience, the sensation in the body, is what you would label as being unpleasant, something like illness or cold or hunger. I've read, you know, texts, you should not express preference or cold or warm. But even without adding story to that sort of thing, it seems like there are base experiences like illness that just the experience of it in itself is unpleasant. And I would like to know, in a state of freedom, is even that knowing like, oh, I'm experiencing illness, somehow different than experiencing it the pre-freedom?
Well, first of all, I think I want to clarify a little bit your idea of pre and post freedom. Because whether or not you mean this, and I'm just using this as an example to teach to, because other people may have their own ideas about it, but it's an important thing to understand. It's not like there is a moment and then it's all downhill from there. It's all, you know, done. It's the that in every moment that we're alive, we have moments where we're free from all kinds of stress, and moments when we're a little bit hung up, and then more until we're totally messed up. But we all experience moments of freedom. What happens with more experience of meditation and more realization is those moments are more and more, more often lasting longer, more likely. And the moment, the experiences where we're in confusion and reactivity and lost in our are lesser and lesser, and they become thinner and less compelling. And so it's just a it's a matter of degree. It's not like you get a person who now is post-awakening, they're fully awakened, and that's it. All you need to do is look around the world of any people who think of or who may have claimed to be awakened, and they may be awakened a lot, but to be 100% fully, never ever triggered by anything, with no bad behavior going on in any corner, very, very rare. And on the other hand, many wise teachers with certain areas of unresolved stuff, for example, the history of many of the Asian teachers who came here, who then were exposed to such liberal sexual mores in this country that they got in trouble in that area. I didn't mean to say that they were fakes, you know, or that they weren't awakened, but they had realization. But in certain areas, it never had actually been resolved. So for, that's much more what goes on in awakened moments rather than awakened people. So that I just wanted to get to that. But now in what we talked about, unpleasant and non-preference and so on. So from a survival point of view, which is our relative reality, our normal relative reality, unpleasant is unpleasant, and our little executive assistant makes sure we take care of it as best we can. And that's absolutely normal and continues. So pain is unpleasant and we want to try and get rid of it. You know, and good food is delicious and we want more of it. And that's just normal survival. The problem that we run into that Buddhism and spiritual teachings attempt to address is when we are completely invested in getting rid of or getting the things which we need on a survival level, so much so that we don't have any other perspective. Spiritual teachings are a much broader perspective. So pain is still unpleasant, no question, pain is unpleasant. But when somebody's got a bigger spiritual bank account to draw on, then it's unpleasant, but we're not going to get freaked out about that. And so, you know, we'll do what we can, take care of it. We live in a country where there's surgery, drugs, and so on and so forth. You have to go to the hospital at times. But it's not the end of your world. It doesn't mean that now everything's awful because such and such has happened. And so it's not oppressing you or running the life. You still deal with what you need to deal with. But it's a matter of seniority, one teacher, one student once I had said, well, it's a matter of seniority. It's like, if those thoughts, oh no, this is awful, are running the show, then life completely sucks because you've got some pain. Whereas if you could have some pain, that's not very pleasant. We have to deal with it in whatever way we can, if we can. And life continues on, and there's all kinds of other things going on as well, and it's in proportion, and it's not got seniority. My awareness is bigger than that. And so my care gap is included because I respect myself and do what I need to do to make it pleasant. But it means that I'm not repressed by the unpleasantness. It's not now making my life a misery. I'm not miserable because I have pain in my knee. Whereas if I didn't have as much spiritual awareness, then, you know, I could get completely hung up with one situation like that. You know, people do, for instance, when you're heartbroken, it's huge. You know, it's a very important part of our life. You have primary relationships and they go on the rocks or something happens and they take over people's whole everything. You know, what crimes of passion are because of that? Like, they're completely oppressed by that particular scenario. There's no perspective, there's no ability. When there's more spiritual awareness, then heartbreak is tragic and sad, but it's not the end of the world. It's not as big as, it's not so out of proportion. Things get better in proportion. So not pre and post awakening so much, but with more awakened awareness, then the situations of life go up and down, but they're not so high, and they're not so low, and they're not so outrageous, and they don't matter so much. It's part of the deal. Some days it's pleasant, some days it's unpleasant, sometimes we're ill, sometimes we're well, sometimes we're bored, sometimes we're really enjoying ourselves, but that's not the main raison d'être. It's not about that. It's about being present and being okay with, and then go up and we can go down and we can go along, and there isn't the intense reactivity around it all. There's the appropriate responding to whatever we need to do, pleasant and unpleasant things need to respond to them, but it's not reacting to them with them being the power. Reactions are with a situation, whatever that may be, or the circumstance, the person, the event is the power, and we're a victim to that. That's when we're not in control. No seniority. That has seniority. When we've developed our inner resources more, we are, you know, we get to choose. Is this appropriate? What should I do now? I go to the hospital now or not, or deal with it in the morning. We're in charge. There's more, wisdom is running the show rather than events and circumstances.
Kathleen. Yes. When you first started, when you're talking about the survival mode of the mind, and you start trying to get out of that, it feels exhausting.
Yes.
And I think you to say is that with practice, that becomes less. Is that what you?
Absolutely. It's Kathleen. It's just like learning any skill. And if you watch little kids running to ride a bicycle, it's exhausting. You know, they're gripping it, they're holding their breath, and they're white-knuckling it, and they're like, you know, and it's intense, and they can only do it little bits at a time. Or, you know, any such learning of any kind of a skill. And then when you're good at riding a bike, it's not exhausting. You know, you're not gripping and holding the breath and struggling away. You're doing what you need to do to adjust your balance, and that's it. You know, using your forward energy, and that's all. And so, likewise, with meditation, it's exhausting to begin with. One of the things about meditation is it's shocking to begin with. It's like, oh my God, my mind is all over the place. And like, why would it do it? It's so simple. Why would it do it? And so there's that as well. It's sort of appalling. And this is amazing. And so it's so like mercury, the mind. You know, so to be able to do something you've never done, you know, you need to just gently, gently, over and over and over and over, gradually. And there are a few aids. There's the directing. I'm going to talk more about this on the weekend. Are you going to be here for the weekend? You're here more, for sure. And we'll practice it. One of them is directing attention to something, which is a home base. But there's repetition, gentle repetition. There's kindness. There's interest. You need to find some place to be which is interesting. So that you're, because when we're interested in something, it's not work to notice it. When you like something, you know, it's not punishment or effort to do whatever you like to do, because you're fascinated by it. And so it automatically draws attention. So we need to develop these other sort of supporting players to help us with it. And it is exhausting initially. And so, but it just gets easier and easier. And then we prefer it because the other, as I said already, that when we're lost in our craziness, our neurosis, I like to call it the neurotic mind, I'm quoting a Tibetan teacher when I use that word, but it's such a good word, then it's costly. And when we're not, and we're resting in simple awareness, it's so easy that in comparison, nibbida starts happening. It's like, oh, I just don't want to do it. So it's less, not so exhausting. It's a practice. There's no shortcut. You learn these skills and whatever supporting players you need, and then you have to keep doing it, and then you get better. Just like bike riding, just like violin playing, like any skill. It gets to be beautiful and exquisite instead of slogging and falling. Yeah.